Welcome to the 2014 Candidates Forum from the Paramount Theater in downtown Burlington. Brought to you by Select Bank and Trust, Ivar's, America's Mattress of Alamance County, Woody's Body Shop and Wheel Alignment, and True Lion Federal Credit Union. Tonight, you will hear from the State House and County Commissioners candidates. Here is your moderator, Byron Tucker.
And Ron. Good evening. Good evening. There we go. I'm Paul Mooney, publisher of the Times News, and I want to thank all of you for coming out tonight and being engaged members of our community. I'd also like to thank our planning committee members for tonight's event, starting with Mr. Byron Tucker and John Brockwell from WPCM for helping to moderate tonight's forum, which tonight is actually John. So thank you, John. I'd also like to thank Dave Wright and the City of Burlington for the use of this wonderful facility and our own Times News editor, Madison Taylor. I'd also like to offer special thanks to our candidates that are going to be here tonight, including Representative Steve Ross, Mr. Ian Baltudis, who are up front here, and then later, Bill Lashley, Dan Engel, Bob Byrd, Harold Bowling, and Eddie Boswell. So welcome to all of you. One of the Times News core responsibilities to the community is to provide a platform, whether it's on the opinion page of the paper or on our website or at events such as this, to share and debate ideas, opinions, and important issues, or issues that are important to our community, like the ones that are going to be discussed tonight. In the end, we hope you'll find tonight's discussion insightful, educational, and useful in making an informed decision at the polls in about a month. I'd also like to invite each of you to join us again tomorrow night, when we will be hosting candidates running for Alamance County District Attorney, as well as the Alamance Burlington Board of Education. Once again, thank you for being here. Without further delay, please allow me to introduce tonight's moderator, Mr. John Brockwell.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Thank you. Thank you, folks, for being here tonight. We certainly do appreciate it. Thank you for coming. This means a lot. It means that you want to be involved in the political and electoral process here in Alamance County. And once again, WPCM and the Times News are very proud to put on this event for you here tonight. Now, out front, there is several copies of the Voter's Guide, which was in yesterday's edition of the Times News. In case you didn't get your copy of the paper yesterday, you can pick one of these up out front. It's the Voter's Guide. It tells you everything about all the candidates and all the offices that are up for election in Alamance County on November the 4th. Now, there will also be some out there from all the candidates as well who will be present, especially this evening. And then we invite you, if you can, please, to come back tomorrow night for our forum as well. We are very pleased tonight to have these two fine gentlemen with us. As Paul mentioned, a little bit later on, we'll have the five candidates for the Board of Commissioners in Alamance County. The rules tonight are pretty simple. There aren't any. We're just going to have a little frank discussion here among friends, all of you listening this evening too on WPCM, and we're just going to sit here and chat about what's important for Alamance County as it regards to the state of North Carolina and the legislature for the next half hour or so with these gentlemen, and then we'll talk at length with the five candidates for the county commissioners. Folks, please welcome these two gentlemen. The first is completing his first term in the North Carolina State House. He's a former mayor of Burlington. He's a former city councilman in Burlington. He's also vice president and financial advisor with Wells Fargo and serves on the Elon University Alumni Executive Board of Directors. Please welcome Steve Ross. And we'd also like to welcome this evening a local entrepreneur, graduate of Elon in 2008. He's the owner of the local branch of Vibration Solution, LLC, which is a product design and manufacturing company. He is also involved with Burlington Beer Works Cooperative, as many of you know, which is a brew pub project here in Alamance County. And many of you remember he was a candidate for mayor of Burlington last year. Please welcome Ian Baltudis. We're going to give, we're not going to have opening statements. We're going to give our candidates an opportunity to say a few words about themselves and their campaign at the conclusion of this session, because we want to just get right into some questions and some issues and get their responses on some things. There aren't any time limits here. We're just going to have some discussion, and each candidate will have a chance to respond to whatever. Can have a little give and take here. We're going to start, gentlemen, with an issue that's important to North Carolina. It's important to Alamance County. Everybody knows about it. Same-sex marriage. As you know, voters in North Carolina voted over 60% in favor of imposing a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage in North Carolina. And as many of you know, a federal judge in Asheville last Friday rescinded that. And there have been couples all over the state of North Carolina, same-sex couples who applied for and have gotten married here in the state of North Carolina. In fact, I believe we checked with Madison earlier today. He checked with Hugh Webster's office, and I think I know of at least one couple that has been down at the Register of Deeds office today in Alamance County. Well, that's all we know of right now in the county. Simple fact of the matter is, yes or no question to start, do you support same-sex marriage in the state of North Carolina? Mr. Ross.
Well, it's a complicated issue that has gone on now for several years. The voters in North Carolina voted, I think it was around 61%, for a constitutional amendment. We have in our system of government a system of checks and balances. We have the executive branch, we have the legislative branch, and we have the judicial branch. And that creates a system of checks and balances. So what we have now with the issue is that the judicial branch has issued an order that that makes it legal in North Carolina. And, as all citizens are should be law-abiding citizens and should support our laws, whatever they are at the time. Now, in North Carolina, the majority of our population had voted for an amendment to the Constitution. We have one judge that has made a ruling. This is probably going to go through the court system for some more time. I don't know what the outcome is, but, my position is and always has been that I am pledged to uphold the law, whatever that is, and so we'll have to wait and see. How this turns out through the course. I understand from reading an article in the paper that the Register of Deeds office did go ahead and prepare for today, and now my understanding is that they've had one couple come in. So the system is working, and it's working like it's supposed to. We'll just have to wait and see what the ultimate decision, if the Supreme Court weighs in with any additional facts.
Mr. Baltudis, do you support same-sex marriage in the state of North Carolina?
I do support same-sex marriage. Is that all right?
Yeah.
So we do support same-sex marriage, and we are glad to be endorsed by Equality NC. This has been a question on a lot of voters' minds when we've been around the community talking to folks. And it really boils down to strong families, and there's some protections that come with the Marriage Act that really help couples of all types come together and create a strong family situation. So we're happy to see that it's moving along, and we'll let the courts be the final judge on that.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what could happen. And being a member of the House, you were not a member at the time that the constitutional amendment was approved to put on the ballot back in 2012. But since then, and the other day before the judge made his ruling in Asheville, Speaker Tillis and Senator Berger both said that they would try to intervene legally in this. And then the judge came in and made his decision. Have you spoken with the Republican leadership in Raleigh, and is there anything that that you know of that they're going to do to try to continue to intervene in this?
No, it's at this point in time is out of legislative hands, and it is fully in the hands of the courts. So any further action would have to come from the Supreme Court, it's going to work its way through the court system, as a lot of things do. And so I don't expect any further action coming from the legislature. Obviously, I can't speak for the rest of the legislature, but as far as they're concerned, it's it's not an issue now that I think there is, really there's nothing left that the legislature could do. I think it's all up to the courts.
In if the Supreme Court gets involved in this, and let's say they reverse the decision that the federal judge made, if you're elected to the state house, since you support same-sex marriage in the state of North Carolina, what would you do as an elected representative to try to overturn that again?
So the real question, I think Ross mentioned something here, Representative, said there was a 60% vote for, but this was in a low turnout primary election. So the real facts and figures as to how many North Carolinians support this act is up in question. So we'll just have to wait and see what comes out of the courts, but I think North Carolina will speak in the end.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about another important issue, and Madison's going to bring up some questions that we'll try to get to before the session is over as well. Let's talk about another important issue that's been important in North Carolina over this past year, and it affects Alamance County as well. That's teacher pay, teacher tenure in the state of North Carolina. Steve, did you support the 7% pay increase for teachers this year, or were you a supporter of the 11% pay increase?
I was a supporter of the negotiations went back and forth. This was a budget compromise that went back and forth between the House and the Senate, and I would have supported 11% if the budget figures had come back and had allowed 11%. As it turned out, the budget figures came back in as 7%. And I want to emphasize this is an average number because there's been a lot of misinformation tossed around about the teacher pay raise. It's an average number. There's some teachers that got more. There's some teachers that got less. It just depends on where they fell in the cycle for the pay system. But I fully supported the 7% and will further because this is just phase one. There are other phases to the teacher pay raise that's coming, and it's coming in a new proposal that the governor's put together, and I fully support it.
Ian, do you support the teacher pay increase? Is it enough?
I do. I would say, however, that it's not enough. When I'm out talking to folks, we talk to lots of teachers, and I've seen lots of teachers of all experience levels in different states of financial hardship. When we talk about teacher pay increases, we need to be talking about bringing it up to the national average. Teachers teach because they're passionate about what they do. They teach because they enjoy being in the classroom and they want to see our community continue to succeed. And when we talk about teacher pay, really we're talking about respect for our educators. And when those educators go home and can't support their families, can't put food on the table, that's not a profession and a state that respects educators. So when we hear folks talking about the 7%, I'm glad Representative Ross spoke about it being confusing. It's not 7%. It's really more like 5.5% when you factor in that they gave them their longevity into that pay. That was all pay they were already getting. And really, when you look at educators in Alamance County, they only got an average of 3% raise. So it really didn't make a tremendous impact on our community. And really, what we're still struggling with is that it hasn't really helped us get more teachers in the classroom. As of 2 weeks ago, we still had 50 classrooms without a teacher. Now, there's subs in those classrooms, but we don't have a full-time teacher. So where we are with teacher pay is still too low. It's not allowing us to keep passionate, certified teachers in our school district. And when our school district is struggling with the basic need of teacher turnover, we're not able to really shine. ABSS has some tremendous programs, including CTEC, CTEC, and as well as the vision plan. But before we can really go ahead and make sure those programs are fully operational, we need to fill that basic need of having teachers in the classroom.
All right, let's talk a little bit about keeping our teachers. Because, as you know, there have been school systems from around the country, especially Houston, Texas, which have come around the Triad area, held job fairs for teachers, and they're trying to take our teachers away from because they have higher rates of pay, especially for first-time teachers. What are we going to do, or what will you do as an elected representative in the legislature to keep our teachers here in North Carolina? Is there more that we can do besides offering them a 7% pay increase? Steve?
All right. Well, let's talk about that, because there's been a lot of misinformation spread around about the Houston system in Texas. The new pay scale that we have just passed for our teachers in North Carolina now place our teacher pay higher than Texas. And there are many other factors that go into it. You have to ask yourself, why is Houston up here recruiting teachers? Well, one reason that they're recruiting teachers is because the cost of living in Houston is so high and the crime rate is so high. They have the third highest in-school crime rate in the United States. The big thing, and I want to emphasize this, Texas caps in their pay plan, Texas caps their teachers, their experienced teachers, at $44,000. That's as high as they can go in the Texas system. I got these numbers from Texas.
Is this for new teachers or for experienced teachers?
Experienced teachers, because you go into a graded process. You go into a plan where you're there a few years and your pay goes up. It's automatic. And we just reinstated the automatic steps of pay increase that Beverly Perdue froze back when she was governor. She actually froze the pay plan. Teachers could not get a pay raise. They unfroze the pay plan. We did that. But the cap in North Carolina under the new system is almost $10,000 higher than what it is in Texas. So if you're an experienced teacher, you have no reason to go to Texas unless you want $10,000 less at the end of your career. And you're going to teach in a system that has, like I said, the third highest crime rate within school in the nation, and a much higher cost of living. An $800 apartment in say, Greensboro, for example, would run you about $1,500 in Houston. So there's been a lot of hype about teachers leaving and going to Texas. And I think that when you really look at the facts and look at the new pay plan, you'll see that we probably will have some of those teachers come back, and we welcome them back.
Mm-hmm. Ian, why are we losing so many teachers in the state of North Carolina? What do we do to keep them?
So I'd like to share a story with you from canvassing South Thompson. I met a gentleman whose son was one of our wonderful teaching fellows. Now, if you recall, my opponent in his term got rid of our teaching fellows program. It produced valuable, highly skilled teachers who are committed to our community and bound by a certain term to teach in North Carolina. Well, this gentleman who was a teacher went back, got his master's. He was passionate about what he did, but when teacher pay froze, he was challenged with how to support a family and continue to pursue that profession. He did end up leaving to South Carolina and took his family with him, took all those North Carolina dollars that had been invested with him after he fulfilled his term of service, and we lost him for a $10,000 pay bump. So pay is part of the equation, but it's also what the legislature is forcing into our classrooms. And that goes to standardized testing. If you look at how many weeks at the beginning and the end of each semester teachers are forced to focus on standardized testing and not on curriculum, it's unfortunate. An educator shared with me this simple equation. Education is knowledge plus citizenship. When we over-test our students and force our teachers to work with limited resources to prepare students for those tests, we lose sight of producing citizens for our community through education. We also need to talk about teaching assistants. So respect for educators is about making sure that their classrooms are supported, and that's done through teaching assistants. It's done through making sure we have funding for textbooks and school supplies. And when we're placing demands like my opponent has presented, which is pay based on merit and requiring teachers to test for that, but then taking away their teaching assistants and their supplies and their textbooks and expecting them to produce better students, we're setting them up to fail. And teachers recognize that and do not want to be in those classrooms. When we talk about teaching assistants, I've personally worked and tutored at Alexander Wilson Elementary for the last 4 years. I've worked side by side with teaching assistants and seen the value of one-on-one help with students. Teaching assistants and volunteer tutors work with the lowest performing students, and we help to raise them up, help them perform with the class so the teacher can do their job, which is helping the whole class progress to grade level. And without those assistants and without that one-on-one support, teachers can't do that, and they won't stay in our classrooms.
Are we losing teachers' assistants? Are we losing a lot? I know that there, some have been let go here in Alamance County. Why are we losing the teacher assistants? What do we do to get them back?
teacher assistants were fully funded this year. What we did was we gave each system the flexibility to make the decision as to whether they were going to use the money for teacher assistants or for more teachers. Some systems chose to hire more teachers, and obviously you can't get quite as many teachers for the salary of a teaching assistant, but it was part of reducing the ratio in the classroom. There are about 100 different systems in North Carolina, and they all operate differently. So what we're trying to do is give the flexibility back to the systems themselves, but the funding was there. You know, if you want to talk about funding, let's talk about funding. Let's go back to 2008 and 2009 when Perdue was governor. She cut instructional supplies by $100 million. She cut teaching assistants by $500 million. Improving student accountability, she cut that by $38 million. Staff development, she cut that by 12. Now, some of these programs, improving student accountability and staff development, literacy coaches, you mentioned, school technology, she eliminated four of those programs altogether and actually left us $1 billion lower in expenses or expenditures than what we're paying into education. She left us about $1 billion lower than where we are right now. And I've only been there 22 months. And the Teaching Fellows program was eliminated before I got there. I voted in the House to bring it back. I think that within the next session, the General Assembly will probably see the Teaching Fellows back. But what the General Assembly had ultimately decided to do was put the money into the Teach for America program because they felt like they could reach higher risk, more at-risk kids, and the Teach for America program because that put teachers, that put money into schools that were having a hard time getting teachers because they're high-risk schools. So, you know, it's moving money around sometimes, but the ultimate goal is to accomplish the same thing, and that is to get all kids educated at the same level.
Ian, you have something else you want to say about that?
Yeah, I'd like to. So the 7% teacher raise was funded by money that I'd like to point out will not be there next year. It's temporary sources of funding, including the lottery. That's inconsistent. And so the issue is, if we're funding that in what my opponent says is a phased plan, why are we funding it temporarily? And then what are we actually funding in our classrooms? So I sat down with the superintendent of ABSS a few weeks ago, and he indicated that we're still about $130 short per student of where they really need to be in order to provide the right balance of educational support, materials, and the best quality curriculum. So we're still well short, and just because the funding is there this year doesn't mean it's going to be there next year, and doesn't mean it's really being put to the test. So we really need to make sure that when we look at education, we're looking at it as an investment, and that we're allowing our system to grow and develop. North Carolina has one of the fastest growing student populations in the country, and my opponent got rid of the continuation budget. This is an item that kind of slipped through, but that allows school districts to scale with changes in enrollment, and that is now something that has to be approved separately from the legislature. So if students shift around or change schools or change districts, now that budget has to be approved separately. So schools will be forced to act for certain amounts of time without proper funding for those students.
Okay, let's move on because we've only got about 20 minutes left in this particular session. So let's talk a little bit now about a question from our audience. And this has to do with jobs in the state of North Carolina. As both of you know, the unemployment rate in North Carolina has steadily declined over the last year or so. And the question from the audience is, both of you support job growth, undoubtedly, here in North Carolina. And has the state added more jobs than the national average? Do you think we have added enough jobs over the last year or two here in North Carolina? Ian?
Well, it's interesting that you say it's declined, because if you look at the last couple months, we've seen actually the largest month-to-month increase in unemployment in this state in the last 3 years. North Carolina and Alamance County continue to have higher unemployment than the national average. And the issue is really, how are we creating jobs? How are we doing that in Alamance County? As a local small business owner, my passion is entrepreneurship. Now, my parents will tell you that began at age 5 with a Kool-Aid stand in front of our house, but where it really became a lifelong career was at Elon University, where I founded my current company. 6 years, From that founding date, we now have 35 employees here in Alamance County. I work closely with local business owners, local entrepreneurs, and students who are coming up and looking at opportunities in this community and how they can create jobs here and how they can create a living wage and employment. And when we look at policies that are happening and in our community, we have to look at how are we supporting the small businesses, because the businesses that we grow here in Alamance County are the businesses that understand our community, that value it, and that give the most back to Alamance County. And my opponent has cut the small business tax credit. Now, I understand from starting a company, small business owners work for years without taking a paycheck. We've sacrificed, we put in long hours, and every dollar really matters. He cut a $50,000 tax credit that put dollars back in small business owners' pockets in those early years when they needed it most, in exchange for shifting tax cuts to higher incomes, to special interests, and to corporations. And really, when we look at how we create jobs, it's about how do we help foster those small businesses to develop.
Granted, though, the job rate, the unemployment rate in North Carolina has come down. Talk a little bit about that, Steve, and what you and the Republicans who lead the state legislature have done to create jobs in the state of North Carolina.
The unemployment rate has fallen, and it's actually fallen faster than the national average. Alamance County actually fares better than state average as a whole. But what we did was we determined we needed to jumpstart business in North Carolina. It's a complicated process, but part of it involved tax reform. We had an antiquated tax system that had been set up back in the 1930s, so it was well over time for some revision. That system was designed for a manufacturing type economy, which we have moved away from. So the tax reform that we did, there were some credits that were taken away, but as my opponent knows, most small businesses actually carry their income tax or carry their taxes on their business right over to their personal income tax. So they got a nice tax decrease on their personal income tax. We had to, in order to make tax reform work, and again, this is something that's a process, it's going to take more than one stab at it, but to make it work, we had to weigh credits against revenue, and we felt like that the individual income tax cut that we granted was far better in the long run for the economy than some of the tax credits that were in the system. Other things that we have done, there were about 21,000 regulations that were choking business. I mean, that's what I hear every day when I talk to businesses. They're still choking with regulation. We eliminated some 3,500, over 3,000 regulations. We're sunsetting several thousand more, and every regulation that comes along has to go through the scrutiny of what's it going to do to the business and what's it going to do to the business economy. Or the business climate in North Carolina. I have worked hard on both of those issues to try to make North Carolina as business friendly as we can be, because that's how we attract jobs. And it's already starting to pay benefits. We're seeing it come, businesses coming into North Carolina now in droves, and we have all kinds of interest in our state now from corporations and small companies that want to come in here because of what we've done. That's the reason why our unemployment rate has come down so much. We've gone from about the 47th worst tax climate to about the 16th best tax climate in the nation, and that attracts business. And I think that we're going to see the economy has had a little bit of a stall over the last couple of months, but North Carolina continues to grow. We continue to see the interest coming in from other companies or corporations. And I'm looking forward to a very vibrant economy in North Carolina. We've been through a pretty bad recession. We're not out of it yet. It's taken 5 years. So the process of jump-starting an economy is not something that's going to happen overnight. It's a process that's going to unfold over years. I think we've done a really good job in North Carolina. I think that's one of the reasons. If you take Forbes magazine, there was a great article in Forbes magazine last week that gave North Carolina the highest grade from the Cato Institute on their financial report card.
And they state the things that we've done in tax reform, things we've done in regulatory reform, and actually gave North Carolina a grade of A, which was only one other state tied with us for the highest ranking in the nation on that report card. And there are others. CNBC ranks us the best state in the nation for business climate, and we're just seeing great things start to happen.
Okay, let's move on because of our time constraints here. Here's another question, gentlemen, from a member of the studio audience here at the theater. We have just recently moved here to retire from Washington State. Our impression is that the legislature in Raleigh is completely dysfunctional. What are you going to do about that, and are you a part of the problem or the solution? And we'll ask Ian that, since, Ian, you're the challenger in this race. Is the legislature, in your opinion, completely dysfunctional?
I'd say yes. That's one of the reasons I'm running. And I'd like to point out a couple issues with what my opponent just said, which is the small business tax credit was for personal income. So while he said that was a good thing that we have personal income reform, that was a tax credit that hit directly in small business owners' pockets. And also, Alamance County continues to be higher than the state average. It's at 7% out of the September numbers. North Carolina's unemployment average is at 6.8. So continue to underperform the state. And the issue here is that the policies that are happening in Raleigh that are driving the changes in North Carolina are driving our state down the wrong path. You look at the majority of North Carolinians polled, and they say that North Carolina is headed in the wrong direction. And we're creating jobs, like my opponent said, but 60% of the jobs created since the end of the recession have been poverty level or lower. So what are we really creating in our state? What are we really creating in our community when we're incentivizing corporations, outside special interest groups, to create jobs that pay poverty level or below? Really, what we need to be talking about is, what is the future for Alamance County? What are we building here? And how do we become a hub for quality jobs? What is the next chapter for Alamance County? And it really revolves around how our state legislature treats education. Education is truly an investment in our community and an investment in the future of North Carolina. I had the privilege 2 weeks ago to walk through the Career Technical Education Center with local employers like GKN, like Han Manufacturing, like Various Stone Fabrics, and we're looking at how our local education system is becoming a pipeline for an educated workforce that supports local industry. And there's lots of opportunities, but we need lots more support there, and we need to address the basic needs of keeping educators in the classroom in order to make sure our state is in the right, moving in the right direction.
Okay, Steve, is the legislature dysfunctional?
Well, I think people get us sometimes confused with Congress. Congress is obviously dysfunctional. But I do want to point, you know, one thing out that was just said. Yes, the unemployment rate in Alamance County is 7%. But the unemployment rate in Alamance County is 7%. But when I went to Raleigh only 22 months ago, it was a little over 10%. So in 22 months, it's come from 10% down to around 7%. Now, that's progress. It's not where we need to be. We know that. It's going to take time. You can't just drop an unemployment rate from 10% to 4% overnight. You've got to put policies in place that work, and we've done that. And the process that we're using in Raleigh, we inherited a $6 billion deficit, and we have been able to overcome a $6 billion deficit, balance the budget, and then initiate the reforms that we're putting into education right now. And we're starting to see the fruits of that payoff. And, you know, I've been there 22 months. I don't know if you consider that part of the problem or not. It's a pretty short period of time. But in that 22 months, I've been blamed for just about everything you can blame somebody for. But I'm a problem solver. That's what I did here in Burlington when I was on city council, when I was mayor. I worked at solving problems. That's what I do in the financial services industry every day. I solve financial problems. So when I got to Raleigh, I got the opportunity to start working on some of these physically tough issues that involve both our revenue base, our tax base, and our expenditures. And it's just going to, it's a mammoth task. I told someone, I said, when you're a local government and you want to make a change, you know, six guys get together and make the change, and it's done. Raleigh, it's like turning a battleship, and it's something that's not going to happen overnight. But we are making great progress in North Carolina, despite what a lot of people would try to have you think. The figures don't bear it out. We're making progress.
All right, let's move on. And along that same line for just a moment, let's talk about retirement for state employees. This is something that you've been involved with, as you served on a committee to overhaul the retirement plan and the implementation changes by Janet Cowell. I wonder if you talk a little bit about that. Talk about the changes in the retirement plan for state employees, and what does a retired state employee have to look forward to now?
Well, what a state employee, there are a number of things, and the pension issue is really complicated. But I headed up the committee along with Janet Cowell, who's the state treasurer. We worked together in trying to make some reforms to our pension plan. Now, 4 or 5 years ago, before I got there, so you can't blame this one on me, somewhere in the process, they changed the vesting period on the pension plan from 5 years to 10 years, which is really unheard of. I mean, if you look at public pension plans around the country, I couldn't find another one that was 10 years. So that one of the areas that I was able to go to the legislature and say, look, this is not practical. It's not helping us retain employees. We've got to go back to 5 years on the vesting. So we did that. Another area was when employees were hired with the state of North Carolina, they put money into the system, and if they left before the end of 5 years, the only thing they got back was the money they put into it. I said, that's not fair. We need to pay them at least a going rate of interest on the money that they have put into the system and the state has used for 5 years. There are many other areas we have reformed the pension, but the big thing, and I think the most important thing, and this is what I want everybody to take away from this, for about a decade, the pension fund had been seriously underfunded in North Carolina. I've got the figures if anybody wants to see it. There's actually 1 year back around 2002, 2003, somewhere in there, where they didn't fund it hardly at all. Now, that's not a healthy pension plan, and we all know what's going on around the country with pension plans. In the last 3 years, we have fully funded the retirement system in North Carolina. So the employees in North Carolina can not only have to, the employees in North Carolina now can rest assured that the state has stepped up to the plate and we are doing what is necessary to keep their pension plan safe and fully funded. Not many states are doing that. In fact, if you look at North Carolina, North Carolina's pension plan is rated as one of the best in the nation. And Treasurer Cowell does a good job with it. And there are so many mathematical equations that go with this thing, it would drive you crazy just to look at some of them. But just about once a month, I'll get something over from the Treasurer's office. Will you please look at this and tell us what you think? It's an $80 billion fund. And it's well managed and it's well funded, and with a few more changes that we're going to make, employees are telling us they'd like to have a defined contribution plan. We're studying that issue right now. So, you know, North Carolina has one of the best pension plans in the nation.
Ian, is the legislature doing enough to take care of our retired state employees?
So what my opponent just said is all well and good, but there's only one of us at this table that's actually endorsed by those state employees, and it's not him. So when we talk about state employees, we actually end up talking about teachers first, and it upsets a lot of state employees and a lot of folks who are in school support staff. There are so many people in our community that make our community function, but yet it's teachers that end up as the headline, and we need to step back and take a look at everyone who makes that contribution to our community, because our state employees only got a $1,000 raise, and that was their first raise in quite a while. And so while we've changed the pension, that's helpful, but that's just a light at the end of the tunnel. There's so many employees that are working that are so far away from that retirement that need that resource right now. So it's how do we continue to support state employees, how do we keep them in their jobs, and how do we help them support our community. Now, one thing my opponent said before was that he enjoyed his time in the city government when it was just six guys working on the city council to make policies happen. I find it interesting that since he's gone down to Raleigh, he's worked to take local control away from local government and move programs like regional funding down to Raleigh so that our state government, our local municipal governments have less control over their policies, over their regional programs. He's even worked to cut local revenue sources like small business licensing taxes. It's cutting over $500,000 from Alamance County municipalities this year.
Okay, we've only got a couple of minutes left. We're going to just touch real quickly on one more thing, and we'll only spend about a minute on this, and then we'll hear from both the candidates with a closing comment or two. Today, a judge in Wake County said he was not going to issue an injunction to allow concealed carry weapons at the state fair. Do you or do you not support the idea of carry conceal at the state fair? Steve?
Well, I think there are certain places where you obviously do not need to carry a concealed weapon. You know, obviously banks are one. You can't carry one into the governor's mansion. And state fair is obviously another place where the agriculture commissioner and the governor have determined that you shouldn't have a concealed carry. And I support the decision that the agriculture commissioner made and the decision that the governor has made. There's plenty of law enforcement at state fair. We've never had an issue that I know of. And so I support the decision of the agriculture commissioner and the governor.
Ian, you agree or not?
I do agree with the agriculture commissioner. My opponent has attacked me before on Second Amendment, and he's done that without doing his homework. I have two pistol permits, and I believe that when we talk about guns, we need to be talking about how we keep them out of the hands of criminals, how we keep them out of the hands of the mentally ill, and how we keep them out of the hands of domestic abusers. Those are the real issues when we talk about gun control. Now, it's about public safety. And so this issue that the judge decided on is about, really, was there an issue, and do we need to consider public safety at the fair?
Okay. If you're going to the fair on Thursday, leave your guns at home. Okay. We've reached the end of this particular session. We want to thank our two fine candidates up here tonight for being with us and answering your questions, and we certainly do appreciate it. Now, in conclusion, we want to give our candidates an opportunity to speak directly to you folks that are here at the Paramount Theater and also our radio audience tonight, the electorate here in Alamance County in House District number 63. Ian, we'll start with you.
Sure. So I'm running because I care about our community, and I want to ensure that we give our children the education that they deserve. Over the past year, I've spent countless hours going door to door, meeting with thousands of residents in our community, and listening to their concerns and their frustrations. We need a strong leader who will fight for the people of Alamance County. There's only one candidate on this stage who owns a small business. There's only one candidate who creates quality jobs for our residents. There's only one candidate who has been endorsed by our teachers. And there's only one candidate who values our state employees. My opponent has chosen to vote straight party line, enacting legislation that harms the middle class. When you send me to Raleigh, you will have a representative that will put the needs of our community before outside special interest groups and corporations. I'm working every day to earn your vote on November 4th. And I'm working tirelessly to secure a prosperous future for Alamance County. Thank you.
Okay, Steve.
Thank you. I'm running because I have been a part of Alamance County all my life. I was born here. I grew up here. I love Alamance County. And I spent my childhood in the city of Burlington, graduated from Williams High School, stayed in the community, went to Elon University. I served on the city council. I spent about 20 years here in local government, a couple of terms as mayor. I don't consider myself a career politician. I consider myself a problem solver. And what we do and what I have done in just the 22 months that I've been there is tried to help balance the budget
and trying to help right the ship and get the government of the state of North Carolina moving in the right direction. It's like I said earlier, it's a mammoth task. It takes a lot of work. Spend many a day and many a night in Raleigh working on all of these issues. And it's been my privilege to go to Raleigh. It's been my privilege to serve Alamance County. And if elected to go back, it will be my privilege to go back and continue to do that. There are many, many issues that we've talked about tonight. They're not finished. They're not done. There's a lot more to do. But I think we have made great progress in North Carolina in the last couple of years, going from a $6 billion deficit to now where we have one of the best, fastest growing economies in the nation, as a number of publications have told us. And it's rewarding to see the results. It was rewarding to see the results when I was here in Burlington. It's rewarding to see the results start to unfold. And, you know, given the opportunity to go back, I look forward to be able to continue to work on these issues and do the best I can for Alamance County. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate you being here tonight, and I'm sure all of you would like to express your appreciation to these gentlemen being here this evening. Now, both Steve and Ian are going to be out in the lobby. They have some campaign material out there that you're welcome to take home with you. They'll also be happy to talk with you individually out in the lobby for the next few minutes as well. So please take advantage of that opportunity. They'll be outside here in just a minute. Now, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back in just a few minutes, we'll have the five candidates for the three seats on the Board of Commissioners in Alamance County. We'll have a discussion there with those candidates, and that's coming up in just a little bit. So don't go anywhere. You come back. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much, John Brockwell, our moderator tonight, for session one of tonight's Candidates Forum. I'm Byron Tucker, and we appreciate sponsorship that we've received here this evening from businesses and concerned entities across Alamance County. And by the way, listeners, you may send questions to the moderator by sending an email to Times News editor Madison Taylor. You can do that during our broadcast tonight. Madison is monitoring the email at mtaylor@thetimesnews.com. That's mtaylor@thetimesnews.com. And be sure to follow Election News and the Times, starting with the voter's guide that was published this past Sunday and available at the Times News office on South Main Street in Burlington. It includes sample ballots and other information about contested races, in-depth previews of individual races that are still to come. Get your election coverage now through November 4th at The Times News and thetimesnews.com. We'll take a quick break and be right back at the Paramount Theater. You're listening to tonight's Candidates Forum on 95.1 FM, 920 AM WPCM, and online at TuneIn Radio WPCM.
95.1 FM, 920 AM, WPCM Burlington, Graham.
It's back and bigger than ever. The Carolina Hosiery and Jeffrey Socks Giant Warehouse Sale. Everything 80 to 90% off. Children's tights and socks, 80 to 90% off. Diabetic and boot socks, 80 to 90% off. Athletic socks, soccer socks, even sweatshirts, bath and hand towels, plus much more, including $1 t-shirts. October 16th, 17th, and 18th at 505 East Webb Avenue in the old Clapp Brothers Furniture location. They're all there. Browning, Realtree, Wrangler, and Duck Commander. Doors are open from 10 a.m. till 6 o'clock p.m. No ticks, please. Hurry while supplies last. That's the Carolina Hosiery and Jeffrey Stocks Giant Warehouse Sale. Don't miss it. Even though Pink Floyd said it, it's not true. There is no dark side of the moon. It gets sun on both sides. It's just another urban legend. But when you want to shed light on the best styles at the best prices for men and women, your shopping spot is Urban Legend at the Crosswalk across from Victoria's Secrets at Alamance Crossing.
You can believe what they say about us at Urban Legend.
high school football game of the week takes us on the road this Friday night as we follow Graham to Jordan Matthews. It's the game of the week, the Red Devils and the Jets from Siler City. The high school football game of the week is brought to you in part by Cox Toyota Scion, Mevin Shrubbery Market, by Radley Body Shop, Alamance Oil Company, by Bulla Warren Tire and Automotive, Holly Hill Mall and Business Center, County Ford, Wings to Go, by Adams Towing and Recovery, Quality Collision Solutions, the Tire Center of Burlington, the Decal Source, by Stearns Ford, Jersey Mike's, and by Alamance Community College. 7 o'clock is our airtime. 7:30, we kick it off from Siler City. It's Graham at Jordan Matthews on 95.1 FM, 920 AM WPCM, and online at TuneIn Radio WPCM, the sound of Alamance County and the sound of high school football.
Hello, Miss Flower, I need you.
When Mr. Grotsky needs his triangle, helpwanted.com.
Miss Flower.
Where he can find hundreds of local employees.
Miss Flower.
Post jobs and start getting resumes in minutes.
I need you, Miss Flower.
With more local employees than ever.
Yay!
TriangleHelpWanted.com. Long name, amazing results.
Where are you?
We now return to the 2014 Candidates Forum from the Paramount Theater in downtown Burlington. Brought to you by Select Bank and Trust, Ivar's, America's Mattress of Alamance County, Woody's Body Shop and Wheel Alignment, and Truliant Federal Credit Union. Here is your moderator, Byron Tucker.
Thank you very much, and welcome back to the Paramount Theater. Joining me, editor of the Times News, Madison Taylor. And what was your take on this this conversation? Then I'll give you mine.
Well, you know, I thought it was a really good conversation. I thought John did a really good job of keeping things moving, and it was conversational. I think that was John's goal coming in, and I think he accomplished that goal.
Yeah, and it seemed to put both the candidates kind of at ease. I think they kind of got into the conversation. It seemed like that my observation of EM Baltudis was compared to his run for mayor a year or so ago. As a forum goes, he seemed to be much more at ease and prepared. I noticed that he used a lot of notes, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong for that, with that. But in this particular conversation tonight, he was very sure of himself and very prepared.
Yeah, he was more professional today. Last year when he debated Mayor Wall, he tried to direct the debate into answers. He pretty much tried to orchestrate the debate as an answerer, maybe not always addressing the question that was asked. Today he was on top of the questions that were asked. He had some bullet points I think he wanted to get to, and he got to them. And I thought by the same token, Steve Ross did a really good job of defending his position in the state legislature by, you know, pointing out some things that were like misconceptions about education funding, and actually accurately pointing out that a lot of the cuts were made before he actually even got in office. So.
Right, and because he alluded to several times in these 22 months down there, look, this happened before me, you can't blame this one on me, but like all, no matter Democrat or Republican, all who are down there now inherited whatever that situation is, and they got to learn to work through it. Steve fell back several times on the fact that he was a problem solver, and going back to his 22 months of experience there, Ian Baltudis, on the other hand, on some of the questions that John was asking, part of the conversation, Ian seemed to circle back to what appears to be his core base, and that's teachers.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I was talking to Ian before the session, and he wanted to talk a lot about education and about the environment, which we didn't talk about tonight, but education was his primary focus.
Yeah, and it seemed to, and that even circled the question of jobs, and when that was brought up, and Mr. Ross was talking about how the job picture has improved here in Alamance County, Mr. Baltudis kind of disputed that, and then again, circle back, we got to protect teaching jobs here.
Well, yeah, Ian did that, but, you know, Steve started out talking about how things were improving, but then he backtracked on that just a little bit, which I thought, you know, he said, well, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. Economic recovery doesn't happen overnight. We're taking, you know, one step forward, maybe another step back. So, you know, Steve did kind of, like, come to the agreement that maybe things aren't moving quite as fast as people want.
Madison, I hope that we'll have at some point either tonight or tomorrow before we close our 2 days of forums here to have a conversation with Paul Mooney. But while I've got you, our many thanks to you and your staff for helping prepare for this and then joining in the two entities, WPCM and also the Times News, to put this on, because what we're doing here tonight, both of us, is our commitment to the community.
Yeah, I think so. It's part of providing a service, being engaged as a community, and really, you know, people have responded tonight. We had a pretty decent crowd.
Yeah, no doubt. And also, I want to remind the listeners that the Times has done an outstanding job by putting together the voter's guide, and even though it was published in Sunday's paper, there are plenty of copies.
We have it. Yep.
All right, and we even have them here. So if you're on the way to set to here with the county commissioner candidate, you can pick some of these voter guides up outside. Also, if you're listening, whether you're listening on radio or if you're listening by way of the internet, and if you have a question, if one of these candidates said something or didn't say something and you want to ask a question, Madison Taylor is equipped with the email here tonight, simply mtaylor@thetimesnews.com. That's mtaylor@thetimesnews.com. And your question will certainly be submitted to our moderator.
It'll be submitted. You know, we haven't gotten around to as many questions as I would like, but, you know, when you have a discussion, sometimes all the things don't get going taken care of. So
yeah, no doubt. Well, Madison, I think we're just about ready to get started with the candidates for county commissioner here. We'll take one more break, and Madison will be talking with, I believe, Chris Lavender after the county commissioners have their conversations.
Very good.
All right.
Thank you, Byron.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madison Taylor of the Times News. One more quick break, and when we come back, we'll start session two here with the candidates for county commissioner of Alamance County. You're listening to the Candidates Forum on 95.1 FM, 920 AM WPCM, the sound of Alamance County.